Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review back today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today as usual, and our good martini is similar to yesterday's. Yesterday's was that Marco Rubio was in the race. Today it's how Marco Rubio joined the race and the contrast he's trying to set up perhaps with some fellow combatants for the Republican nomination, but certainly for the likely Democratic nominee. Here's Marco Rubio yesterday in Miami talking about why it is that Americans are working hard and going to school but still not getting ahead right now.
It's because while our people and our economy are pushing the boundaries of the 21st century, too many of our leaders and their ideas are stuck in the 20th century.
So that could apply to Hillary or Jeb, potentially, Jim. And then towards the end of the speech, he talks about how he's going to miss seeing his kids play sports over the next 19 months, if in fact he makes it all the way to Election Day. But the reason he's doing this is for them, because their generation is at a perilous time right now.
Because if we can capture the promise of this new century, they will be the freest and the most prosperous Americans that have ever lived. But if we fail, they will be the first generation of Americans to inherit a country worse off than the one left for their parents. The final verdict on our generation will be written by Americans who have not yet been born. Let us make sure they record that we made the right choice, that in the early years of this century, faced with a rapidly changing and uncertain world, our generation rose to face the great challenges of our time. And because we did, there was still one place in the world where who you come from does not determine how far you go. Because we did, our children and theirs lived in a new American century.
Jim, it's fascinating. He's obviously echoing JFK and even echoing Bill Clinton when he said it was time to get away from the generation that George H.W. Bush was part of.
Even if Marco Rubio is not your guy in this cycle, you kind of have to like the fact that he is, I believe, 43 years old, one of the youngest guys in the field. Also in his 40s is Bobby Jindal. Ted Cruz, I believe, is somewhere in his 40s. I believe Rand Paul is in his 40s. With the exception of Jeb Bush, almost every one of the Republican nominees is going to be not just younger than Hillary Clinton, but significantly younger than Hillary Clinton. And it's going to be a nice generational contrast there. And it's been pointed out that the younger candidate has won every presidential contest except for Bush versus Gore. And we'll pause a moment for all of the liberals to say, so that means they always did win. So you look at that and you kind of recognize, okay, look, that Chris Matthews, for all of his nutty, crazy statements, it is younger, more lucid days, once said that Americans always select the guy with sun on his face. It's a kind of a metaphor that just kind of means the guy who seems to be more energetic, brighter, more exciting, more enthusiastic about taking on the job, somebody who doesn't seem old and tired. And, let's face it. Going up against the fairly young Barack Obama in 2008, going up against the fairly young Bill Clinton in 1992, that's an advantage that Democrats have usually had. It looks like there's going to be a very nice inverse of that this year, and that even if it's going to be the coronation of Hillary, which we'll get to in a future martini, that you still are going to have a very young-looking, future-looking, more energetic, more forward-thinking Republican field, and the odds of Republicans having this contrast working for us in the general election are likely to work very well. Also, you're going to have the party that likes to think of itself as being younger and hipper, trying to persuade itself to be, wildly enthusiastic about the grandmother who finds going to Chipotle to be an adventure.
Yeah, there's a lot to like there, and we'll certainly get to that in the third martini as well. Let's move to the bad martini now. And Jim, this is a bad story that just keeps getting worse when it comes to the Iranians. This is from the Daily Beast. It says, for years, Team Obama crowed about keeping an advanced Russian missile out of Iran's hands. Now the Kremlin suddenly seems eager to hand it over to Tehran. This nuke deal with Iran had better work, because the Kremlin is lifting a ban on selling a powerful air defense system to Iran that would render an airstrike on Tehran's nuclear weapons facilities nearly impossible. And then it goes into the details of this system. And Jim, it just makes you scratch your head or perhaps bang it against the desk as to the fact that the Obama administration, through John Kerry, never even dealt with missile systems in this framework. They're just giving away the store on the nuke program itself.
You know, I'm going to quote R.D. Brewer over at Ace of Spades, who looks at this story and kind of observes, in the eyes of the media and most of the folks who are fans of this administration, Obama is always brilliant. He's always unfathomable by the common man. He does things differently because he knows better. So don't worry about Iran getting this top-of-the-line Russian air defense system dummy. It's all part of the plan. I think that's an observation of why media blindness and the media's tendency to see things through the most sympathetic lens possible towards Democrats and the candidates they prefer, why it can be really damaging. Because we should be looking, you know, like you look at that, you're like, okay, there is no indication that the regime in Iran is going to change. And in fact, if they're so going to be open to inspect, you know, the White House announced they've agreed to a really amazing inspection regime. And then a couple of days later, the Ayatollah says, no, we didn't. No, we're not. And if you don't have full inspections of just about everywhere, then the deal is worthless, because that means they can be developing their own nuclear weapons program in secret, even though we're giving them this giant concession of lifting all sanctions, either immediately, as the Iranians think they agreed to, or gradually, as the White House thinks they agreed to. And if you keep noticing this amount of disagreements, you don't really have an agreement now, do you? You know, apparently the Persian version and the English version don't match up at all. So you look at this and you're recognizing, okay, if they're totally going to be open, why are they upgrading their air defense systems? All right. I mean, like, you know, Occam's razor would suggest they intend to cheat on this agreement. They intend to enjoy the advantages of having all of the sanctions lifted and still develop nuclear weapons so that either in 13 years or 15 years or 10 years or whenever they, you know, whenever it is most advantageous to them, they can announce, surprise, we have a nuclear weapon. We are the new power in the region. Everybody else has to back off and do as we say. And, you know, we can see this disaster and this alleged, you know, this whole deal is designed to prevent nuclear arms proliferation. And all it's managing to do is set off an arms race with the Saudis, the Turks, and the some of the Gulf states to create their own nuclear arms weapons. So, gee, a nuclear arms race and lots of weapons programs in the Middle East. What could go wrong, Greg, right?
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, yesterday the bad martini was Hillary Clinton launching her campaign and her pathetic attempt to paint herself as the champion of the common man, now that she has come to the conclusion that the people at the top still have way too much power. She's going to be the champion of the working person and make sure all your dreams come true. So now she's set off on this common woman tour, taking a van trip all the way from New York and then eventually getting to Iowa and tooling all around to a bunch of different private events where she'll never be asked a question. Yesterday, everyone was all a Twitter, pun intended, with this fact that she met somebody at a Pennsylvania gas station, and then she went to a Chipotle a little bit further down the road where she didn't bother to talk to a soul other than the person who was putting her burrito together, and nobody recognized her either. So, Jim, it's kind of odd that they're going to this length to try and paint her as something she's clearly not. I guess we can just have a lot of fun with this.
This is a particularly weird development. I suppose, once again, you'll see the same kind of media coverage we talked about in the last martini, the sense of, oh, she knows what she's doing. This is all part of a secret plan that no one else can understand. I was among those who actually thought that the opening debut video was pretty good. I think it was good to begin with lots of quote-unquote, well, I would say ordinary Americans, but I guess there are no ordinary Americans, just like in Lake Wobegon. Everyone is above average. They were everyday Americans as opposed to those part-time Americans. I guess maybe that's what you call an undocumented immigrant. But, you know, start with the people. And the idea, this race is not about me. This race is about you and your dreams and what America's government should do. You know, that's a much better theme for her than, it's my turn, America. You owe me this, you know, trying to avoid a sense of entitlement and the idea of, well, let's start small. Let's not have the big showy rallies. Let's not do this. You know, let's have a soft opening, so to speak. I guess I can see the logic of that, to do the video and then, which was delayed, and the tweet, which was delayed, and then to go on this strange van tour. She's calling it the Scooby-Doo van tour, which, by the way, is exactly what she did in 2000 when she began her race for Senate. You may have noticed, Greg, a lot's changed since 2000 in a lot of areas. But then this part in which she's very deliberately not only not seeking up media attention for the times that they stop the van, pull it over and get something to eat. The other weird, you know, kind of aspect of this is that, you know, clearly she didn't want to talk to anybody at that Chipotle. She, you know, kept the sunglasses on and you know, I assume that for all of her flaws, if she wants to schmooze a room, she can schmooze a room. So she didn't want to. So maybe she just wanted a burrito and just wanted to get back on the road. But there was something very strange about this. You, by the way, you also can see Huma in the back behind her in that security video. Like, yeah. You know, we're talking about the schedule of a woman who just announced to run for president by looking at security footage, Greg. Right now, the audience is looking at this and saying, where do we go? What do we do with this? This is too weird and surreal and odd for us to make fun of. To me, the simplest explanation is that the entire giant Hillary team full of consultants, all, you know, just you just kind of feel the greed and the lust for that $2.5 billion she's allegedly going to spend. They're all really excited at the thought of this campaign, but nobody's really thought about what's at the heart of what she actually wants to do. And so it's a little bit of throwing it up and seeing what works. Lanny Davis, one of her hangers-on who may or may not be plugged into the inner circle, was saying, well, the video wasn't really the official launch. The official launch is going to come with a speech. Greg, wasn't that supposed to be the official launch on Sunday?
I'm running for president was pretty clear, I thought.
Right? I mean, like, was that the trailer? You know, was that the movie, really? You know, the teaser trailer, then the full trailer, and then we get to see her next to Ultron and all that kind of stuff. I don't quite understand what's going on here. And if we can't understand it, I don't think that there's some brilliant secret strategy that's going to win her votes that we're not seeing here. We're not geniuses, Greg, but we're not dumb. And if it seems like there's absolutely no coherence to this, then I think that there is no coherence to this because I don't think anyone in there really knows what to do. And it's not a matter of them, the people on Hillary's team being dumb. I think there's no consensus and there's no easy way to make somebody who's been on the national stage for 25 years seem new and exciting and fresh and looking for the future. And I suspect that the Rubio announcement probably freaked them out. Because that was exactly the sort of launch that candidate would love to have. It was a great speech. The people in the room were like screaming like Elvis was up on stage. This great inspiring story, great location choice by the Freedom Tower in Miami. It all just hit the right notes. And then Hillary, she's in a van somewhere on her way to Iowa at Chipotle.
Let's hope she's not down by the river. But
there you go.
It's too bad there wasn't a news camera there because the odds of Hillary actually knowing how the Chipotle counter worked without a detailed briefing.
Well, as I said, it's an adventure.
Yes.
It's an adventure. Now, somebody on Twitter had said, look, if going to Chipotle is an adventure, I'm Indiana Jones.
Wait, black or pinto? I don't know.
Wait, let me go back. What are my options again? Wait, what meat again? You know.
What are carnitas?
And, you know, she keeps going back and changing her mind. And I'm sure the person behind the counter is saying, oh, ma'am, at this point, what difference does it make?
Perfect exit. Jim, welcome back. Talk to you tomorrow.
Good to see you, Greg. Be back tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.